Yesterday, we spoke with the director of the private and progressive Little Red Schoolhouse and Elizabeth Irwin High School in Manhattan, which began to group the few minority students in the same homeroom so they'd have a place where they felt less like the other. Here's Director Philip Kasson.
Our students of color, some of them, not all of them, feel somewhat othered in their classrooms. And if for part of their day they could feel a part of a larger group in our predominantly white school, that felt supportive of their academic experience.
But the parents of some of the minority students said it smelled of segregation, and they worried that it gave their kids the feeling of being left out. So the school ended the policy. Our question, is it ever the right thing to group African-American or Hispanic students together when they are the minority in a school? We turn to Dr. Beverly Tatum. She's the author of the bestseller, Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? She's also former president of Spelman College, an historically black college for women. Dr. Tatum, the director of the Little Red School, Schoolhouse said they're revisiting this. Maybe it should have been more structured, but that it was very well intentioned. Your thoughts?
I think it was well intentioned, and certainly there's a lot of evidence to suggest that there is value to give black kids time together. Sometimes that time together is called affinity grouping, not necessarily in class time, but time in a school, time to talk to each other about the issues that adolescents are concerned about, that can be very helpful.
Talk about what is happening for these teenagers, because as you write in your book in the chapter called Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria, things are different in grade school. Kids are playing in the sandbox with kids that look different from them, and then something happens in high school. What's happening?
One of the things that's happening is the changing adolescent brain, meaning that as kids move into puberty, they start to think in a more sophisticated way. They start to recognize the ways in which race plays itself out. And, you know, there's lots of literature to suggest that black boys in school in particular are more likely to be disciplined for similar behaviors. And also girls are experiencing questions about what does it mean to be a young black girl? And having space to talk about that is not a bad thing. It can be actually a very helpful thing.
The stereotypes that we see of black women are imposed on them. And so they might develop some oppositional behavior. Explain that.
Sure. Well, if I am a young African-American student and I'm trying to understand what it means to be a black person in a white-dominated society, one of the things that I might be thinking about is I don't want to be perceived as, quote, acting white. Some social scientists have said, you know, that black kids think doing well in school is acting white. But that's not universally true. If you are in a largely black school and a lot of black kids are in schools that are segregated because their neighborhoods are segregated, they're going to the local school. And if you are in a school like that, the honor students are black. But if you are in a predominantly white school, the honors group is largely white, and most of the black and brown kids are in the lower tracks. If that's what your school looks like, then you are likely to think doing well in school, being in that honors track, is so-called acting white.
It's such a vicious cycle because very often the kids are in those lower tracks, maybe because they come from low-income families, but very often there's bias on the part of the teacher that puts a child in that track when, in fact, they should be in a higher track. There's a lower expectation. But what ends up happening is this sense that they don't belong anywhere else, so they start to bond further with the group that they're in.
And in fact, tracking often does result in resegregation within racially integrated schools for the reason we were just talking about. The kids of color are being put in the lower ability groupings, perhaps because they are less well-prepared, and maybe that's related to family income and previous preparation. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it isn't about that, mm-hmm. because there's also data that suggests that black kids who test as well on placement exams are still less likely to be placed in those upper tracks.
You know, the Little Red School said they looked at research. It was probably yours in your book, but to read that was pretty amazing. They'd have the same test scores and
yes.
still not be placed. So what do we do about how to address this notion that perhaps there should be some support without making it look like segregating them or, again, reinforcing the low expectations? This brings us to the Boston Metco program, the Greater Boston Metropolitan Council for Education Opportunity Program, 1994, the notion of busing kids from the inner city, from trouble spots in the inner city, out to the suburbs, very good schools, but all white schools. It was kind of a failure at first. Talk a little bit about that and then what happened.
Sure. So most of the children who are traveling from Boston into these suburban schools are Black or Latino. Mm-hmm. And often there's a sense of not really belonging. They are not part of the local community. And so when superintendents of these programs look at the performance of the Black kids in particular, they often find that the kids are not doing as well as they would like them to be doing.
There's also, maybe not in Metco, but you had another anecdote about a young Black girl who was in a school majority white, and a teacher was saying, are you going to the dance? Kid doesn't want to say, how am I ever going to get to the dance? You know, I get bused to school. My parents don't have cars. We live in the city. But she doesn't say that.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher gets so frustrated that she won't say she's going to the dance that she then ends up saying something racial. She says, oh, come on, you people love to dance, which adds to the racialized moment that the young girl was feeling.
Exactly. That teacher who made that comment was well-intentioned, but nonetheless projected a stereotype, and it made the student feel even more like she didn't really belong in that school.
Yeah.
But there was a program back in the 90s. I was very involved. And one of the districts I was involved with decided to start a program in the middle school for Metco students. And they set aside one period a day for the kids to meet together to talk about issues related to academic performance, academic achievement, as well as some of the social concerns they had.
Wait a minute. This is a Little Red Schoolhouse's homeroom.
It sounds like that, doesn't it? But what the difference between this experience and the Little Red Schoolhouse is that they did it for a year and then they evaluated how it worked.
Yeah.
And what they found was that the children who were having that experience improved academically and also they became more engaged socially.
Why? What did the kids say happened?
The kids said they felt more supported. They had the opportunity to talk without invoking stereotypes about some of the things that were challenging them. So if you've been riding on a bus from Boston for an hour and maybe there's been conflict on the bus, you could go to that meeting and talk about it, get it off your mind, and then be more focused in class. Or if something happened in class, let's say, here's an example that one of the kids provided in this study. They were watching a film, Eyes on the Prize, which is about the civil rights era. And some of the white kids were laughing at something that happened in the film, something that the Black kids found upsetting. And so the fact that their white peers were laughing as though it were funny and the Black kids were feeling like this is horrible was upsetting to them. Rather than walking around agitated, they were able to talk about it, debrief it, so to speak, in that time together in ways that they found helpful.
By the way, the title of your book again, Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? Nobody ever asks, why are all the white kids sitting together in the cafeteria? They're bonding in many ways.
Absolutely. And it's also important to say, as you just did, we don't ask why are all the white kids sitting together in the cafeteria. But in fact, at the college level, it is actually the white students who are more likely to be racially isolated. It is possible for white kids still to not engage with the diversity, to stick to people who look like themselves.
It's just such an odd thing. In any high school or just about every college, the entire culture is Black. Whether it's the music, comedians that they're following, or the sports figures, it must be very odd for young Blacks to see that.
Well, it's true. I mean, certainly the cultural references that you talked about. So, you know, those Black artists whose music becomes mainstream, you know, those athletes who are admired by white teens as well as kids of color. Those are physical symbols that many people recognize and appreciate. But at the same time, you can be a young African-American sitting in Starbucks and have somebody call the police on you.
Something. That's Beverly Daniel Tatum, former president of Spelman College, the country's oldest historically Black women's college, author of the newly released Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? It was first published 20 years ago. Dr. Tatum, thank you so much.
Thank you.